This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And Ciso.
Hello, welcome to Seagull Social Season 4, Episode 8. Now, look, at the end of the day, it's a bad result, isn't it? Let's just get that out of the way. It's not a good one. It's not a pretty one. We're not here because we want to be, okay? But luckily, I've been joined very last minute, to be fair. Thank you, boys, for joining me, because Maz is currently stranded out in France, thanks to the Eurostar queues. If you look on Twitter, you find everywhere. It's horrendous. And Ben's working. So instead, we've got our great fillers, but together, actually, for the first time, I think. But we're with Jack and Adam. Jack, mate, how are you doing, despite the result yesterday?
Not at the best of weekend. It took 7.5 hours to get back yesterday in the car because of the road traffic accident on the M40 that closed it for
hours. The M40 was shut.
So that never seems to happen when you're in, does it? So that wasn't ideal. But other than that, I had a good time in the car. Sunday I was going to go to some women's football today and I'd overslept. But I just went for lunch. So
nice.
All in all, pretty shit all round.
Fair, mate. Brutally honest. Yeah. So what about you, mate?
Yeah, mate. Good. I was actually going back up to Manchester. It was a very simple journey, not to sound too smug. So I was back home by about 4 or 5 o'clock, which is lovely.
Same here. We've come back to I've come back to the Midlands, so it's only taken me an hour and a half. But sorry, Jack, for mentioning that. It doesn't really make the result any better, does it? You know. So at the end of the day, we've got to talk about that, I suppose. But yes, it's not a good day at the office, is it? In fact, it's the worst day at the office in a long time, I think. I think it's the first time we've lost by 6 goals since 2012, if I'm right in saying, against West Ham.
You are correct, yeah.
Which I remember specifically because I didn't go to the game. I was actually in Hove Tesco's. And I think by the time it took me to go from there back to my dad's car, I think we were 3-0 down. So that was mad. And that pretty much gave me vibes of this one, really. And Jack, get me started, mate. What went wrong yesterday, but more to the point? It was just abysmal first half, really, wasn't it?
What went right? it was a little bit of a shocking result. I will say now, and this is probably Villa, a very, very, very good side. In terms of the game, and I know this is going to sound probably slightly, I do think the 6-1 was probably a harsher scoreline than it should have been. I think there were some big defensive errors in that last 10, but yeah, I think Villa Park's not an easy place to go, especially for us. I don't think we've ever had we've never won there.
Never going back.
except in lockdown, and that doesn't really count, does it? They've won 10 on the bounce, a hard place to go. They've won 10 on the bounce at Villa Park. I think the first half, it just sort of unraveled slowly. And then that was just the beginning of the end, really. I think we just lacked everything. I think it looked a tired team. Some of our best performers look particularly leggy. Purvis being the main one. And obviously he's been great for us. But I remember the first goal when it went in because the cross came in right in front of us. I was like, Matoma didn't track him very well. I'm sure he'll admit that. But he's the winger, and I was like, where is Purvis in this situation?
Where is Purvis? That was the question of the first 45 minutes.
He was just gone. And the cross, as much as Matoma should have done better with the cross, Purvis is the left back who should be tracking the winger there. So that just kind of summed it up, really. And then it just sort of unravelled from there, really.
Yeah. Adam, I mean, Ollie Watkins adds to the name of Danny Ings and God knows who else, Callum Wilson. We've got some serious enemies now, and they always seem to be scoring against us. Now he's got a hat trick. It's the fourth time Ollie Watkins has scored against us in a row. And as soon as he scored that first one, it was just, you just knew it was going to happen again, didn't you?
Mm-hmm, completely. I've got a mate who's an Exeter City fan, one of my best mates, and he, obviously Watkins, used to play for Exeter. He loves Watkins, and every year I feel like he messages me going like, Watkins again, Watkins has done it, because he's one of those players who just seems to do it against Brighton. Yeah. I think, yeah, I'll echo what Jack said. I think it's just, I don't think it was necessarily a 6-1 defeat in the way that Brighton played. I think it's just tricky. When you go 3 goals down in the first half, it's so hard for it to unravel. And we were all saying at half time, you know, the first goal after half time, that will really set the tone. We get it. And then you actually think, they're playing all right for that first 15 minutes after half time. And then that Villa goal just kind of takes the complete sting out of it. I mean, I don't know. I think personally, I was turning to my dad and he was turning to me throughout that first half going like, they were just getting so many bodies forward. The overload in that midfield, they just seemed to be bullying kind of Hinshelwood and Gilmore. And I think Hinshelwood played pretty well, and I'm delighted that he made his debut. But to play those two in a midfield at Villa Park, I think it was lightweight. And I think it was actually really naive. I just think, I don't know, I think old Brighton maybe would have managed that game a little bit better. I think we're a little bit more open now.
I'm glad you mentioned that, actually, because that's the point I was going to move on to, was Hinshelwood obviously started, fantastic moment for him. You know, I actually thought on the large basis of it, he wasn't too bad. I think the only trouble was, as you say, the word there, lightweight. I think that was the biggest problem. As soon as you look at that squad on paper, and then you look at that midfield for Villa, you just thought, that's a mismatch physically. And I don't know about you, Jack, but I know we've got Carlos Baleba. He's going to need time. He can't just come in and start and be the new Caicedo, as people thought he could be, because that's not how football works, as we know. It begs the question over, maybe should we have signed another midfielder? But more to the point, are we just going to have to suffer with this for the next 2 or 3 months until Baleba's ready, or until we go in January and find someone else? Or, you know, is there a way around it?
A lot of talking points there. I think Baleba looked particularly leggy on Wednesday. I think he pulled up with cramp about halfway through the game and got subbed off. So you can see why he didn't want to risk him again. I do think some of our problems may have come from, and I know this sounds a bit strange, but going maybe too strong on Wednesday. I think a lot of people were obviously disappointed we were at the Carabao Cup, but to give players like Purvis 90 minutes in that game. But midfield, going back to the midfield mainly, I think, yeah, maybe we could have signed another ready-made replacement, but I think we're all saying that like it was quite easy. Yeah. With Baleba coming in, I don't think there were many other options out there for that position, really, that hadn't either already been taken, or, with no disrespect to us as a club, were destined to much higher things than Brighton. Mm-hmm. I think we've gone with a lightweight midfield, but I don't think the midfield is particularly stronger than it has been, let's say, with Gross in midfield. Gross may be the more experienced player, but I wouldn't say it's like a stronger midfield physically. It's a strange one. I think, because I was thinking back to the Man United game, and you think the midfield in that game wasn't particularly more physical, but wasn't overrun like that at all. And that's with Casemiro, who's arguably one of the best at the job as sort of dominating midfield. So I do think we just got done very badly on the counter at times. I think there was not, and I hate singling out single players, but I don't know whether it's something to do with the way that Webster plays, but when we get countered more with Jean-Paul Van Heck, we seem to be a lot more secure at trying to get back. Maybe he's a bit quicker, and I think Webster does have the tendency to go forward without really thinking what's behind him.
This is a good point. I mean, I didn't want to put this on Webster, because I actually, I heard a lot of it around me, and it did really annoy me, because I didn't think he was bad. I heard a lot of it, particularly with that Watkins, the fourth goal, because I thought that goal was, yes, it killed the game, but also everyone just thought it was an easy dig at Webster because it came off him. But it really wasn't his fault. The fact it got to that position in the first place was just a massive gap in midfield. And then you've just got Watkins on that day, and any deflection's going to go in for him, wasn't it? And I think it just so happened to be Webster. And it's a bit like with Harry Maguire at United, isn't it? It just seems to be whenever something unlucky happens, it has to be off Webster. But I do think you're right. Maybe an element of physicality, dominance. Yeah. There's no real sort of, you know, dominator there, is there really, that's going to break up the play? It's easy to say this, though, after a 6-1 loss. Well, you know, we are sitting third in the table. It's very, very easy to get lost in a pool of negativity. But at the same time, when you look at the sort of unbiased glasses, I think if you look back onto Luton's first game, we were getting a lot of counter-attacks against us. And we said it on the podcast at the time, if we were against a half-decent side, could have actually punished us that game. We had it a couple of times after. Maybe then we sorted it out. I don't know. I still think it's a worry going into January time now with Europe. Adam, I think you've got Marseille up next. Obviously, I'm not going to just move on to a Marseille podcast, but what do you think the answer is in that midfield there?
To be honest, I don't know. But I agree completely with both of your points. Just going back to Jack's point about Man United, I guess the one thing I'd say with that is I think their midfield, yes, they're maybe Casemiro, but you did have like Eriksen and Fernandes in there, you know, maybe not too glamorous players that, you know, you wouldn't expect to kind of put a massive shift in. But I thought it was interesting that when I got back, my dad sent me a little clip of the BT Sport, the TNT Sports coverage, and it was Joe Cole talking to John McGinn, basically saying, you know, 4 of the 6 goals came from transitions in midfield and overloads in midfield. And then John McGinn replies going, yeah, I mean, that was something we really targeted. We saw them against West Ham and noticed how if you really get into the midfield and kind of burst with numbers, that's a kind of a way to get against them. And he was being very complimentary about Brighton, but it seemed as though they'd obviously spotted that weakness. And we saw it against West Ham. We spoke about it kind of after that game. That was a lot of the chat after that game. So I think it maybe looks like there's a little bit of a recurring problem there. And I don't think I really don't want to sound critical because I'm not at all, but like, we weren't massively impressive against Bournemouth either, I didn't think, particularly in that first half. So I think that there is a problem there. How do you fix that? I mean, is it as simple as going out and getting someone? Probably not for Brighton. I mean, we kind of know that's not how they do things. Also, it's interesting with the Belaba thing. They kind of bought him after having sold Caicedo, which rarely they kind of don't tend to do. Often, you know, you already have someone ready to go. So I don't know. I think it's a difficult situation. I think once Belaba's settled in and we have maybe Gross back, I think, I don't know. I think there could be options kind of right in front of us.
The Caicedo sale scared me because that's a lot of S's. The Caicedo sale scared me in the sense of, yes, you're right. It's not very bright in the way we reacted. I must admit, I thought we've had, 3-4 months knowing that he's probably going to go. And I thought we will have a replacement just ready. And it's going to be as simple as that. Probably 2 or 3 days later, we'd probably bring him in. He'd have been unknown and we'd have come in. And happened to be Carlos Belaba, took a little bit longer than we wanted it to. And it was a little bit un-Brighton-like, if you would. But I think, I do agree with you in that even if it was a case of just finding someone ready now, it doesn't even have to be of the quality of Caicedo. It doesn't have to be, but someone to just be able to put a challenge in, because I think that's going to be the biggest test, especially going into these European games. We've got Marseille, we've got Ajax, both in turmoil, but it don't mean anything to us because if we get rattled, as you say, it's quite an easy target if they know how. But yeah, I do hope that we do sort something out there, because, you know, it's a double-edged sword in De Zerbi's thing, because you can either say one way De Zerbi needs to change it, or you say the other way and you feel for De Zerbi because he can't play his game in the same way he did last season, because he lost his 2 cores of his team, you know. So it's, I don't know how you go about that. You've lost 2 of your best players. Obviously, we're not as good as we were when we had them, and it's gonna take time because these 2 players are now bossing it. I wouldn't say Caicedo is bossing it, but I think he probably will be a good player. But I think our best players at the moment, our best midfielders at the moment, play for Tottenham, Chelsea and Liverpool. And I think that's the worry for me. But we'll see. And you see what they're doing now. But I won't just dig into midfield, unless, Jack, you've got something else to mention there.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that maybe he got a lot of the suggestion of him as a player got a lot of hatred. But maybe in the transfer window, he could have looked at maybe bringing in a... It's very hard to sell. I was thinking mainly like just solely a numbers thing, because I do think there was a phase where we did just need a certain amount of number of players in. It doesn't matter whether they're top quality. I think Lokonga was a name that was thrown around. Yeah. And I don't think he would have been the worst player to have in this situation.
No,
to
I do
come
agree
in
now.
With
agree.
The rotation. I mean, people were, you know, prophesizing the end time. And I think it wasn't helpful that there's our report that we've given up on Belaba and we're going for Lokonga now. But to bring both of those in may have just been a number thing. And once again, it's not a player that I would think would be amazing, but I just think we lack the numbers in the squad. Alzate wouldn't have been a bad option to have as well.
Yeah, this is why. What happened to Alzate?
Yeah, it's such a hard sell to sell players you're going to sit on the bench for most of the time. Yeah. And it's hard to say to players, like Alzate wants to be playing game. He had a very good season in the Belgian league for their levels. So he's not going to want to sit around at Brighton and go like, oh yeah, you can stay here for the first half of the season, but we're not going to play you in most of the games. I would guess maybe he had the option or he was told, yeah, we'll have more games. But he wants to be playing first team football, so you can't sell that to him. And then we do have to look to options elsewhere in the squad, like Jack Hinchelwood, who's the younger one. I do think there is maybe a little bit of a problem, especially in the under-21s and what we've got coming through, that we don't really have that many good DMs coming through. I don't know whether that's a us problem.
It's a rare breed, though, isn't it? It's hard to find that. I think Rodri's obviously probably the best in the league at the moment, I think, in being the all-round holding mid. And I think that to be of that nature, we've just been very blessed over the recent years that we've had Rodri. We've had Bissouma, we've had Caicedo. And then sort of we lost both of them. I think McAllister was good enough in DM as well. Mm. And now we're a bit light. And I think it's a bit of a wake-up call, perhaps, to Tony Bloom, to Idko, because it's a bit like, hang on a minute, we can't just bounce back in Brighton fashion without someone that can do that. I think Belaba will be okay. I'm sure he will be. But it's that 2 months period now of you don't want to get knocked out of any more competitions, whether that be Europa League, I think we're already out of the Carabao Cup, say. And you don't want to be giving yourselves a bad run-in before Christmas, because that's not good. Especially with the teams we've got to play now. Obviously, we've got Marseille, we've got Liverpool, we've got Man City to play. We've obviously got before Christmas, we've got the likes of Crystal Palace, etc., Chelsea coming up in December. So it's a tough period for us to not have someone ready to play in midfield if you've got the likes of, obviously, John McGinn outing our problems like he is. And it's not hard to see anyway if you watch the game. But we'll see. I don't want to just be completely negative, but I think it's a genuine talking point here. It's not something... You know.
Can I ask you boys? I'd be quite intrigued to know what you both think on this. Just the amount of changes that we're making this early in the season, obviously only a handful of games in. I get we've obviously had the Carabao Cup and we've had Europa League, but you know, we're talking 6 changes, 8 changes, 9 changes. You know, it seems to be moving around a lot early doors, and we're not even really in the thrust of things quite yet. No. I mean, do you think maybe having a bit more of a settled side could maybe help that?
I agree that a lot of changes are having problems, but it doesn't seem to be... The only thing I'd change is maybe make it more consistent teams. So make like a... And again, I'm not a football manager, so I probably don't know what's best. But I think what I see the problem as being is that we don't have a settled side almost for... We don't have settled combos. I think you can see yesterday why we need to make changes. Like Purvis was just completely unfit. And, you know, not to give him too much abuse for his performance, but he was unfair, and that's why you need to look at it that we do need the changes. So the changes need to be made, but do the changes need to be more of like a set balance? I know that sounds a bit strange. So having like a centre back pairing for the league, centre back pairing for the cup, you know, it does seem strange to me that, you know, with Webster and Igor and Van Heek, why they're being... We're almost testing every single combo possible.
Yeah.
It would be good to have 2 settled combos. You know, even at the AK game, I probably would have preferred Webster to play in that, because I just think he's more settled, he's more experienced than maybe Igor and Van Heek to get together. So, yeah, I do think the changes are necessary, and we can see that, especially with the type of football we play, because it's high pressure, high energy. You're not going to be able to maintain that 3 times a week. But it's interesting you say that we haven't quite got into the thrust of it yet. But I think this period now, looking at how the games have gone, may be our most difficult period. We're out of the cup now. So that means, I think, this is not to go back to Wednesday night, but going out of the cup means we have 3 midweeks now. And if we didn't, we'd have no free midweeks except for internationals until Christmas. So it's good that we have these free midweeks in between now. But yeah, I think the changes are necessary, but I'd like to see them maybe a bit more as like a block, like bring this team in, bring it out. We're doing it with up front, which I don't understand. Like we're playing Welbeck and Ferguson or Fati and Pedro, but we're not doing it at the back. So
I can agree with you to a degree. I think Maz mentioned this actually in the Seagull social chat. It was meant to be on today, obviously, but he said that about he wants there to be more consistency with the lineups. And I said I agree with you, but also think about the players. I the way I look at it is I'm trying to think of how De Zerbi would think and then think of how I would think as a fan. The way I look at it is I can absolutely see why we can't just play all these players because they all are very young. None of them have ever played really in Europe apart from a couple. So we're instantly thin. And then it comes down to our experienced players are pretty injury prone. So we can't just keep them in. Even Evan Ferguson's pretty injury prone. So you can't play him every week as well. So instantly you've got a problem because the only way we can attract these bigger names, if you will, is if they're either injury prone or if they've had a big injury and need to rebuild. So that's the nature of the size of the club we're at. So yes, we have to rotate. You know, we played on Wednesday night. I don't know what happened Wednesday night. As you say, it was a weird one because I didn't think Chelsea were good at all. Apart from they got a little bit into it second half, but I thought we were better than them. Lost the game. Frustrating, Brighton typical, right? Usually we would bounce back, but then I think, yeah, the 9 changes was a shock. I think maybe if he got 6, potentially, like I could see that. But I do think the 2-1 number ones actually does work, which might sound controversial. As much as I thought Steele had a bit of a howl yesterday in terms of how many shots he conceded, I do think that it works. But anyway, we could speculate that all day, but yeah. At the end of the day, we're not Roberto De Zerbi. I don't know what he thinks, and half the time I'll never understand it because he'll be winning games. It's a very odd exception. But yeah, we have now conceded, I think 7 games now since April where we've conceded 3 goals or more. Naturally, that's a bit of a scare. And that does need to be looked at one way or another, but we'll see.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
But I'll move on to the second half, where actually I thought we were a lot better, especially that first 15. Obviously, Ansu Fati does get his first goal, which is obviously good for him. But then it just sort of fizzled out a bit. And as you say, that Watkins goal killed it. But I wouldn't say that we were that bad. Would you, Adam?
No, I don't think we were. And I think obviously, like, the one thing I've been saying this last 24 hours is the midfield. But I do also think that there were a few occasions where, like, okay, yeah, we'd lose the ball and they'd get through and that was a bit poor. But we did also get a bit unlucky in the sense that, like, an own goal and a massive deflection off Webster and just like Steele kind of maybe being blindsided for a goal and stuff. So
yeah, I don't think the ref helped us at all.
Exactly.
And I think they would have won, and that's not to blame it solely on the ref. But if VAR had done its job properly and it had been consistent, arguably we only go in at halftime 1-0 down.
Yeah.
And I think though on another point, though, I think they would have scored more if they hadn't got second and third.
I agree.
The point being, it's all about what ifs and that sort of stuff. And it's frustrating to see that on a day when VAR's had a pretty dire day across the board, and it once again has this afternoon in the Brentford game, it's disappointing to see that they just can't put the rules across consistently. You know, everybody in the ground can see that at the foul on Solly March, except the referee for some reason. And, you know, you can't have a player standing directly in front of a goalkeeper when you take a shot. So I don't understand that. And I think that was disappointing because it would have changed things. So
yeah, I actually agree with you. I also agree with the fact, even if they didn't count, I think we still would have conceded a couple anyway. But yes, it's a different game, isn't it? Naturally, if you don't, if you go in at halftime 1-0, it's completely different. 3-0, it's a punch in the face, really, isn't it? And especially in the way that they came about. And as you say, Adam, the goals, second half goals, were awful. Apart from Jacob Ramsey's goal, it was awful to watch. I mean, some of the goals, I just think, we just don't concede a normal goal, do we? It's either a worldie or it's just calamity. Yeah. And I don't know how we've done it to us. This is in the history of being a Brighton fan. This isn't just now. This isn't just last year. This is forever. We just concede stupid goals. I mean, honestly, I don't know about you, Adam, what you think about that, but it's just been, it's been one of them days where you can put it down as Brighton.
Yeah, no, completely. It's typical Brighton Hove Albion. But I think one thing that I think we'll all do is, because of the kind of nature of this season, what we've got to look forward to, for example, this week, like, I think we just do need to put this behind us. Like, it's one of those completely rogue things. Like, yes, we were poor. Yes, Purvis was tired. Yes, this, that, and the other. Yes, our midfield, maybe there is a problem. But, like, how often will that happen? I mean, hopefully not that often. And
don't say that.
But you know what I mean? Like, I think a 6-1, I think we could be guilty of kind of overcomplicating it and sitting here and really trying to make a big thing of it. But after, you know, you go 4 goals down or 3 goals down, I think weird stuff starts to happen. Individual mistakes happen. Collapse.
It felt a bit like the Newcastle game at the end of last season, in that they got two, you know, that was a 2-1 game. And they scored some very late goals to make it look slightly more embarrassing. Probably worse this time, but they, you know, in this game, they scored 2 late goals. The Jacob Ramsey goal is a great finish.
Very flattering for them.
And then I think the I can't remember who scored the final goal. I can't remember. Douglas Luiz, wasn't it? That goal was just... Was it? It was someone.
But still, I'm pretty sure it was Luiz.
Yeah, Luiz. And, you know, still did actually make a very good save from that. And there's just no one there to clear it, so that was disappointing. But I think it, like I said, I think we started the podcast saying it flattered them a bit, and we were very good in that period just after half time. I think it's just so frustrating. And I remember when that fourth goal went in, because it killed the game dead. The game was dead at that point, and it was one of those goals which is just so. I would even say it's a little bit unlucky to have a deflection that heavy. You can't always react to that very well. And it's just so frustrating when we were in the ascendancy, where we were starting to get our rhythm, just to concede one like that, which was a sucker punch, really. So disappointing.
No, I agree with you. And it's funny when you look back on, I say it's funny, it's actually very depressing, but you look back on the expected goals of the game and we are pretty much even. And we
were ahead,
6-1.
I think.
Or were we ahead? I thought we were like point one of one behind, but either way, whatever it was, it's horrendous viewing, isn't it, when you look back? And it's, as we say, it's an anomaly, and I hope it's an anomaly, and I hope it doesn't happen again. Although I must admit, I've seen this happen a few times now. Obviously, Everton, Fulham, Aston Villa even last season, it's happened a few times, and I think, I just hope that this midfield thing doesn't become an issue, because otherwise... Then you don't know. Then people can blame anybody, because you'd say the summer transfer window is a bit of a fraud. But I don't know. We'll see.
Do you guys think at all it's like a stylistic De Zerbi thing? I mean, like, a lot was made when he came. A lot was made when he came in of, like, he's great. He plays great football. You score loads of goals, but you'll also concede loads of goals. And, like, at the time, whilst, you know, looking back on Potty, you know, we definitely improved. We were really, really kind of, such a professional outfit in terms of you know, being able to kill games, very, you know, very defensively sound. So that has changed as well.
I think you're right on that. But I do think there is an element of this, and this is going to sound negative, but also slightly positive at the same time. That's great, isn't it? Written around for everyone. But I do think we are overachieving, right? This isn't to dampen expectation, but with the squad that we have,
100%.
To be in third position, you look at what Villa has spent. That's not to say they've spent more money, but they've brought in some very good, but very, you know, they're not cheap. Diaby, Zanolo, they're good players. We have a small squad. We've known we've had a small squad. That's always been the thing, even under Potter. And we know we're going to have these results. And I think unless we spend more and have a really deep squad, we're always going to have these problems. And I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. I don't think we're going to become this mega rich spending club. Mm. And I think we do have to realise that the way the Zerbi plays is never going to be perfect unless you have, you know, the perfect players to play the system.
And, so you know, who's let down there then, Jack? That's a point, isn't it? So
no one's let down.
Is it the Zerbi's thing of, you know, because you know his track history, he has walked away from jobs before. I'm not saying that's going to happen.
No.
But I'm saying, you know, if he doesn't get what he wants, he could walk away in the future. I'm saying 2-3 years' time or next year's time, whatever it might be, if he doesn't get the signings he wants. I feel like we did back him to a pretty good degree, especially going forward in the summer. I probably would argue that we definitely needed that midfielder, and I said that at the time, and I do still think it. So you would say that Bloom's backed him, wouldn't you, going out of that summer and into this? So then I think it's a case of, okay, so De Zerbi's then got to do what he has to do with what he's got rather than what he should have had. Do you think?
Yeah. I think nobody's been let down. I think we all know the stature of the club.
I'm not saying that. I'm just
yeah, no. Of course. It's sort of, I think it's the stature of the club. Everybody knows their role, what they're meant to do. And as much as you say we were a lot more professional and defensively solid under Potter, you know, we still had that period where we lost 6 games in a row. And I think that's always going to happen with this size of club and the position we're in. You know, we finished, 6th last season, and we still had some pretty bad spells at times. I'd say pretty bad. We were pretty good throughout, but, you know, the games like the Fulham game, you know, Nottingham Forest game, we probably thought Europe was over at that point. So at least had the doubt in our mind. So I do think it's...
Forest had me thinking it's done.
Yeah. And I think it's just, it's not so much that nobody's backed each other or De Zerbi isn't doing good enough with what he's got. I think it's just that we have to maybe slightly dampen the expectations of, I know people are talking about like Champions League and stuff, and that is the reason we probably didn't get Champions League last season. I think probably our best opportunity to get Champions League was last season because we did get screwed over by the referees at multiple times, that probably those extra points may have seen us up there. But I do think this is the reason we won't get Champions League. We won't move to that very next stage as quickly as some people are expecting. I still think we will in the future, but I think to go from, you know, 10th to 6th to Champions League to potential champions all within that period is going to be very, very difficult. And there'll always be a setback slightly back down. So, yeah, pretty much.
Go ahead. All I was going to say is like, and that implies that you're not going to lose players and you're not going to have to remold the team. Because we're in a stage again where like it's easy to tell Brighton can build on last season, but actually like, they've had a lot of changes and there's lots of, you know, it's not as simple as that, I don't think. Like you say, actually, really.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you. I think going into the end of the season, I think, I don't know, because obviously we've got a January transfer window, things could change. We're not known to spend in January too much, but I wouldn't put it past us if we do have a bit of a rocky end to the year. You never know. I might force someone to take a bit of a punt on somebody somewhere. But I do think we are in that top 5 or 6 bracket of best teams in the league. I think we are still that top bracket. I know that people will just send me the Aston Villa scoreline after saying that. But I do believe we are still in that top bracket. I don't think that's changed because of an anomaly game. If we go up against Liverpool and get wiped again, and if we go up against City and get smashed, then you can forget what I've said. But I think until that happens, we still beat Manchester United, we still beat Newcastle this season. These are teams that are competing with us for that top 5 spot for Champions League. So I still think we're in that race. I still think we're good enough to be in that race. But it just comes down to that same point of midfield. Can we cope with counter-attacks? Can Belaba be ready in time? Or can De Zerbi find a bit of a solution? But until then, obviously it's a bit worrying. But I won't go over too many same things over and over again.
I do think there's like, I always look at the Premier League as like groups of teams. I know this sounds really strange, but I always look at the four separate leagues. You have like, you've got quite a clear, and this season it's coming more and more obvious. You've got quite a clear like bottom 4 or 5 teams who will most likely be in that relegation scrap. Then you've got sort of a middle area where is you're not good enough, you're too good to go anywhere near going down, but you're not really good enough to be challenging for Europe. Yeah. And then you've got sort of the top 4 or 5 teams who'll be pushing for Champions League. And then I think you've got this weird sort of middle area just below that where teams like us, Villa, Newcastle. Brentford were definitely in it last season. They've not been as good this season. Mm-hmm. Man United have probably slipped into it a little bit. Yeah. Where you're pushing for the Europa League places, but quite a lot of you would have a very good season, but finish 7th, 8th, maybe even 9th, and not get Europe. And I think, you know, Villa and us are very similar stages. They've spent more money on their squad, arguably, yeah, since last season to maintain that position. And I think Newcastle sort of fall into it, despite being in Champions League last season.
Oh, yeah. Newcastle, yeah, you know, they are in a different league to us financially. Yeah. Aston Villa are in a different league to us financially. I think in terms of football in play, I think we're still in that conversation. Mm. I don't think that changes. But
yeah,
while we're on the subject, it's slightly different, but while we're on the subject of leagues and where people could go, I don't know if you saw the news today of Barcelona and Soufati saying that they'd be happy to let him go in the summer permanently, and they want him to continue to play well at Brighton to help, you know, hopefully get some attraction towards him. Adam, I'll get your thoughts on that. It could be a bit of rubbish, but it's probably a bit of a somewhere in between. Although I must admit, based on early impressions, I wouldn't be surprised if Barca do accept a fee for him. But it's very, very early on to say we'd buy him yet. But would you?
I think, well, £1 billion release clause.
I mean, yeah, I was waiting for you to say that.
and I think the only thing would be the wages for Brighton, because I think that would just absolutely obliterate their wage structure, which would make things so much more difficult. I think, I mean, as you say, early impressions, you know, maybe suggest that, you know, he's not been excellent, but it'll be interesting to see kind of throughout the course of the season how he proves. I think a player like him is clearly a top talent. So why would you not try and sign him if that opportunity came along? And, you know, they tried it with Colwill. You know, they obviously believe that once players are in the building that they'll want to stay, and they love the culture and they want to stay in the club. So I guess it ultimately just depends on if he's going to be given a genuine opportunity at Barcelona, then, well, it's completely out the window. But I don't think it's as simple as just saying, like, oh, yeah, we could buy him, because I think there'd be many, many seasons. And for that salary, it's going to be complicated. Yeah.
Jack, would you spend 50 million? Yeah. 60 million?
I actually think he's been very good. And it's strange. One thing I do find strange is we've given Baleba loads of time to adapt to the Premier League, but we haven't given Fatty any time.
Yeah.
We brought him straight in when available. So I think he's still in his adapting phase. He looked probably the best I've seen him was yesterday. He seemed to be everything good that we did do in that short period seemed to go through him and Pedro.
Did well against Bournemouth as well, actually.
Yeah, did very well against Bournemouth.
Very well against Bournemouth.
And I don't think he was dreadful against Chelsea, but he needed to finish his chances. That's what basically brought him down.
Mate, to be honest with you, the Chelsea game's not even in my head as a real game. I don't really care about that one at all.
It's like a pre-season friendly, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I would if the... It depends how he goes for the rest of the season. I do agree with Adam, though, like the wage structure thing. I mean,
250 grand a week, isn't it?
Yeah, 250 grand a week. Like, in it's going to be hard to convince him to drop down his wages, because he's going to have to play here. I guess it depends what he wants to do, but
yeah,
I can see him going back to Barcelona, to be honest. I see that they'll inevitably have an underwhelming season again, and Barcelona will sack their manager. I mean, Xavi's doing quite well with them, to be fair. But they'll have some financial problems that mean they can't bring someone in. I mean,
Barcelona,
like, just from a financial footballing perspective, like, if you do any sort of looking into Barcelona as a club, they're just a complete and utter joke financially. Yeah. Like, nobody, like, you know, despite them getting rid of Ansu Fati for, you know, off the wage bill because they need the money, they still brought in João Felix for equally as much money. So where are they levering things up? You know, there was rumours that before the first game of the season, they had something like 11 players registered because they needed to clear stuff out the other door. So it wouldn't surprise me that they want to sell him, but you've got to look at what they want to get out of that deal. You know, there's nobody, you know, for one of the best clubs in the world, historically at bringing through the best player in the world, Lionel Messi, and this was the supposed heir to his shirt. They're just a complete and utter mess. Like, they need to... I don't think they sell to us. I don't think they move around. They'll probably want an extortionate fee. You know, we had a pretty straight loan agreement where we paid a percentage of his wages, and that still had multiple snags because they wanted more money, and that's why it got announced at a certain amount, or at least reports say. You know, if he's doing that, I see a deal very difficult to do with Barcelona on him. But I like him so far. I've liked what I've seen.
Yeah, no, so. It's interesting points. Okay, I think we've pretty much covered the game, to be honest. I don't want to keep going over the same stuff, talking about the same mistakes and the same stupid stuff. But no, I do appreciate your points joining me today, because as much as it's been a tough weekend, at the end of the day, we've got a lot more games to play this season. We know how good we can be. We just got to hope it is one of them blips and we come back from. As we've done before in the past, De Zerbi came out after the game and said that you didn't see the real Brighton. You'll see the real Brighton again on Thursday. Yeah. We all know what happened last time he said that after the 5-1 Everton. We came back and beat Arsenal 3-0 at the Emirates. But look, we've got a trip to Marseille up next. Yeah. And I'm sure, Jack, you're buzzing to be out there. But
I'm very excited. It's going to be sick. Like I think it's a little bit of a dampener to have this result just before that week, because this is such a huge week, not just for the football club, but like as fans, as like if you do go away with Brighton, as many of us do, everybody on the pod does. It's huge to be able to go to Europe to watch us play. And I think, like you say, we need to move on, because I'm looking forward to this week so much. Of, you know, I'm getting the train down on Wednesday afternoon, and it's going to be a great week. And Marseille looked a bit leaky at the back last night against AS Monaco. So
yeah, true.
I think it'll be a great game. And I think if they do get Gattuso in, him and De Zerbi on the touchline could be an absolute exciting encounter to watch. So I think we need to move on, look forward to the week. And kind of, I also do think probably one of the biggest things out of this game is, I think as much as this was probably one of De Zerbi's most baffling decisions, we do need to trust him. We need to trust him, because
he's given us a reason to. Right not to trust De Zerbi. I think if anyone doesn't, they're just crazy, I think.
And I think for he's shown what he can do, even because, you know, we lost 5-1 to Everton, yet still qualified for Europe. That happened. Yeah. And that can happen again. We could get, you know, we could lose 6-1. It'd be very funny if we somehow qualify for the Champions League conceding a goal in every single game.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, from the years of, and it, this isn't to slag off Potter, but, you know, we wouldn't have even been thinking about Champions League qualification or beating these sort of teams away from home like we do.
I wouldn't be having a conversation with you going to Marseille on Thursday night.
I think, you know, the way that he gets us playing is still exciting. It's just a little bit absolutely mind-numbing sometimes when you do 6-1. But we've got to trust him. We've got to trust him.
No, I agree. And Adam, sign-off notes. I mean, anything you want to say going into a bit of a tough period now, but obviously on the back of that, just draw a line under it and we move on, sort of thing.
Yeah, completely. I think that's what we've got to do. As I said earlier, I think one thing that will be so good at that about this season is we've just got so many new challenges and new fun things to look forward to. Like this you know, Thursday night, it's going to be insane. I mean, while AEK Athens at the Amex was fantastic, like the first away day, the first like European adventure for Brighton fans, like, I think you'd, on a kind of human level, like how just fun and sick will that be? So, and look, you're going to have to play Liverpool, you're going to have to play Man City, you're going to have to play whoever at whatever point. So who knows? And also, I think, to be honest, Brighton against a team like Man City in a couple of weeks' time, or Liverpool at the Amex, like actually in a weird way kind of back this more against teams that play like that. Yeah, so agree, in terms of there being like a really tough run, yes, there is. And like, yes, it's going to be grueling and yes, it's going to be really challenging. But like, it's something to really look forward to, and I think Brighton can beat any team. So depending on what Brighton turns up on the day, you know, I think it could be a really amazing few weeks as well.
Yeah, no, I do agree. I think
I've got to say, sorry, just quickly, you said, I think what makes it so good is we can beat any team, and I think one of the problems when we first came up to the Premier League, I think there was this weird sort of part of the fan base who always like, oh, let's get relegated because it's more interesting in the Championship.
Oh, mate, that was me under Potter. I'm not gonna lie.
And it was like, and I know what they meant in that when you watch Championship football, anyone can beat anyone, and you know you could see, you know, Leicester could be top and Bristol City could be bottom, and Bristol City will still get a result against Leicester. And I do think we are now playing football which is like the Championship, and we are enjoying it like the Championship.
That's true.
Again,
I agree.
And that's a great point you made, Adam, like on that.
Yeah, no, I actually do agree with you, funnily, because weirdly, I had that conversation earlier and about the fact of going back to the Championship and where we were and sort of thing. And we even could end up back there soon. You never know, right? Mm. So I'm never going to say it's an impossible moment because I could be doing it a podcast here in the Championship soon. But look at Leicester. But no, I think, yeah, we do play pretty much. We pretty much win every other week, really. And I think that if you're doing that, you're going to be up there and also enjoying football for, again. And I think... Yeah, you've got to look at the bigger picture, I suppose. And if it is a recurring theme, if we do go and lose in a couple of weeks, and you know we are struggling in transition still, it's a bit different. But the fact of Belaba coming back through, etc., it gives me a little bit more hope in terms of midfield-wise. But we'll see. But yeah, thank you all for joining me. It's been an educational podcast. I've got to be honest, I've actually weirdly quite enjoyed it, despite the result. Yeah,
haven't made it like any bad jokes or anything.
It's been a good conversation.
It was one of my more sober games, I think, as well.
So, you know, I'm not surprised you're probably fed up, mate, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know, I seem to be quite... analytical of the game when we lose. So
well, that's the thing. It's quite a good. It's actually been quite a good conversation. You rarely have that when you win. You don't dig into stuff as much, I don't think. Yeah. So it's quite interesting. That's it.
No, I do agree with you. Anyway, thank you both for joining me. Before I go, comments below. I'll go with Adam actually, because last time I got Jack to do it, and it's been a while since you come on. So what do you want people to comment?
This is the bit I dread every time I come on here.
Is it? I'll give it to Jack if you want.
Yeah, go on, Jack.
I just say something nonsense. Just say, yeah, life's a roller coaster in the comments. Life's a roller coaster.
Hurry up.
There you go. Easy.
It's, mate, De Zerbi's certainly a roller coaster. It's been one hell of a journey so far. But yeah, it's only been a year. I feel like I've aged about five, but it's all been great fun. So yeah, we'll see you shortly before we're at Marseille. We'll do a preview with Ben and Maz when they're back, because I feel a bit bad to leave them out before that one. But yeah, safe travels, Jack, on your mission to Marseille. And until then, we'll see you soon. And up the Albion regardless.
Up the Albion.
Yeah, see you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.